8:09 on the phone with us now with a Trails Update, Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Let's see. Well, we've got pretty ideal conditions out there, other than it's a little dusty and a little hot and probably even a little smoky. But conditions are good. You know, there's not a lot going on the trails at this point. We do have the races coming in this weekend, which is going to be super cool fun. So I think get out there and ride early and then stop and enjoy watching some of these hardcore athletes get after it on the road. Otherwise, at this point, I'd say just be careful out there. I know there was one or two kind of bang-ups out there this week, and, you know, we just got to be a little slower and just be careful of what's around the corner, and you should be fine. So other than that, just have a great weekend.
Okay, Charlie, thanks.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Well, the South Summit School District is proposing to raise taxes and the Board of Education holding the required Truth in Taxation hearing next Tuesday. In the studio with details, I have the Superintendent of Schools, Shad Sorensen, along with Business Administrator Kit Bigelow. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, Shad, the hearing was supposed to be held last night, but you had to change it to Tuesday. How come?
Yeah, state law has advised that if the taxing entity is going to be holding public hearings where residents are involved in increases in taxes from either area, that they cannot be held on the same night. And so because of the water increase tax.
Central Utah Water was holding their meeting last night. Yeah.
And so because of that, we chose to move ours to Tuesday so that the residents could attend both meetings.
Okay. So this happens Tuesday where and what time?
Tuesday in the boardroom. Excuse me, in Camas at 5:30 p.m. Well, the Truth in Taxation hearing will actually begin at 6 o'clock p.m. Board meeting will start at 5:30 and do some preliminary business, adjourn, go into the Truth in Taxation hearing, and then come back into session for the remainder of the board meeting.
Okay. Kip, let's turn to you then and talk numbers then. So what are we talking about here in terms of a tax increase?
Tax increase that South Summit is proposing, as we went through our budget and our negotiations with employees so that we could be competitive with other districts in the state, we came up about $407,000 short on our revenue side. And so that is the amount that South Summit is hoping to raise with this Truth in Taxation, is about $407,000. State has a little different way that they calculate a percentage, but if you look at just the tax rate from a year ago, and what we're proposing this year, it comes out about a 2.7% increase. And interestingly enough, as I go back and look historically, that rate is lower than it's been in quite some time, even with the tax rate, because of what they call, well, with the new growth and things, the certified tax rate floats with the assessed values within the district boundaries.
Right. So as the assessed valuations go up, the tax rate goes down. Right. So will people see an increase then on the bottom line then?
They will see an increase on the bottom line. The average homeowner in the South Summit School District should see about right near a $45 increase per year.
Okay. And basically double for a business or second property owner.
Yes.
Yeah. So new growth isn't paying for its way, huh?
Not totally at this point. Had we not had the new growth that we anticipate in the district, the tax increase probably would have needed to be higher than it is. So new growth did make up some of the difference. Increase in students made up some of the difference. But yes, we're still a little bit short when we look at the overall budget that we'd like to have for the district.
All right. So this money is specifically going to pay for salary increases?
Not totally for salary, but that is the main thing that went up in the last year. When I look at total compensation package in the district for fiscal year 19 compared to fiscal year 18, our compensation package will go up just about 10% this year. That includes increases, what is known in the education world as steps. Teachers get an extra step each year they're there, in addition to the cost of living that goes on the salary schedule. Health insurance took about a 4.9% increase this year. So all of those things combined, it came out right around 10% increase.
All right. And then you also tried to be a little bit more attractive to not only attract teachers, but retain your teachers. How did you do that?
You know, that's an interesting thing. In the last couple of years, districts have been very aggressive in trying to get their starting salary up over the $40,000 level. And because of the high cost of living in Summit County, we feel that we got to be at least there and sometimes hopefully above that so that we can attract teachers. And, you know, it's an interesting process. The new teachers that we have hired this year, all but one of them are living outside of our community just because they can't afford to live there right now. And so we do try to be very competitive with others. As we look at our total compensation package, I feel that we are competitive. There are several districts who require a contribution to health insurance. South Summit pays 100% of that. And so when you look at the total compensation, I feel that we're very competitive with those around us.
Yeah. So starting salary for teachers, that was bumped up last?
It is. About a 5% increase on the salary schedule overall. That's a 4% on the schedule and a 1% bonus that we'll give through the year. And so, yes, it did take a bump this year.
Now, is that just for teachers, or did administrators and classified staff see increases as well?
We try to treat all of those different components equally, and so everybody had the same increase on their salary schedule.
All right. And then do administrators and classified, do they also see a similar step in lane increase like the certified
yes.
teachers?
Under our current salary schedules, yes, they do.
Okay. You know, when we talk about, attracting new teachers, I guess that the school districts are actually part of the solution here, right? I mean, to have a college-age kid want to go into the teaching profession, you've got to make it somewhat attractive, right? I mean, we've got to give them a living wage if we, in fact, want them to teach.
Absolutely. And it is difficult in the current scenario.
Yeah. And why is that? I mean, is it constituents that don't want to pay teachers too much, or is it? I mean, what's your guess?
Wish I had the answer to that. Make the solution a lot easier, but I feel the public, wants school districts to be responsible with their tax money. I think everybody supports education when it comes right down to it, but sometimes the pocketbook speaks and. They just want us to be realistic in what we're doing and treat the taxpayer fairly.
Yeah. What about any thoughts about perhaps the district building or maybe even working with like Mountainlands Community Housing Trust to provide some teacher housing?
That is certainly something that has been talked about, and we've had conversations with Mountainlands. We have also, our Board of Education has looked at some of the land that the district owns and the possibility of putting housing on there. As an education entity, we try not to compete with the public sector, and so we want to be careful and cautious about that. But on the other hand, if there are no places for teachers to live, what do you do? And in our particular case, if they're living in Salt Lake, they often drive through two districts before they get to us, and the same with Utah County. And so if your compensation package isn't more competitive than those districts, what is the incentive for a teacher to drive there? So certainly looking at housing is something that has been on our radar and will continue to be so.
Yeah, and you do have property that could be built on?
Possibilities of property, yes.
Okay. So when does school start?
At the Silver Summit Academy, it starts next Monday. And then the following Monday for our middle school, elementary, and high schools in Camas.
Okay, and then kindergarten, like even a week later?
Actually, we're starting kindergarten now when we start the rest of the school, and then they will have testing later on. That's one of the things that the state has encouraged us to do, is rather than do the testing at the beginning, allow the students to get in, get acclimated, and try and beat that learning loss that happens over the summer so that we can get an accurate measurement of where their current knowledge stands.
Okay. And then, Kip, in terms of student growth, what are you seeing for this school year, 2 weeks out, or week out, really?
Projections right now is we'll see probably close to a 7% increase potentially. We've understood that there are several families who have possibly moved out of the district during the summer months, and so until we get in school and those memberships move, but it looks like our enrollment will be somewhere around 1,730 to 40 students, which is more than we had last year. We were about 1,636, I think, at the end of last year. So district is still growing, and we anticipate that. I took some time yesterday to look at our projections that we did from our master planning 3 years ago, and actually this amount comes very, very close to what we projected it would be right now.
Yeah. So do we have enough room for all of the kids?
We make room. At this point in time, we believe we will be able to do it without bringing in any portables, but we are right to the point where probably portables would be our next solution as
okay.
a temporary measure until we can pass a bond and build an additional building.
Yeah, so where do things stand with that in terms of the master planning to decide what needs to be built?
So the board is still in consideration of two models. One, the new high school in which we tried for the bond and it was narrowly defeated, and then also building an elementary school. Both models have strengths and limitations, and so their current plan is to put all of the financials and the architectural renderings, et cetera, together, and in September have a community meeting where they talk strictly about the elementary model, October strictly about the high school model, do a little bit more surveying, and then towards the end of the year, the beginning of next year, make a decision on what will be bonded for that following November.
Do you have those dates set at this point?
I do. They should be. I don't have them in front of me the second Thursday of each of those months.
Okay. Little bit about Silver Summit Academy. So you said that starts on Monday. Fully operating now? All of the work's been done?
Yes. Our enrollments grew significantly there. We have a waiting list. I do not anticipate that we will dive deep into that waiting list, but we have 75 in our elementary program and nearing 120 in our secondary program. And that pretty much puts that building at capacity. And so, again, the first and primary reason that building was built is to facilitate the students that will be moving into the Silver Creek area. And so as that starts to happen, there will be less and less school choice options available
right.
for people to choose into that school.
So when those students come in, those that are there, do they have to move out?
Well, as they leave, those spots will be filled by others.
Okay. And is there room to grow there?
We do have that second building in the back where currently the Park City rain gutter is occupying. And so current plan is that we would transition into that building when they build their new facility.
Right. And those 200 students or so, those are included in your counts at 1730?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And then I had saw that you're also starting to run buses to the academy?
We are not as a district, but what they're able to do is the Park City bus that runs between Camas and Park City, they are able to use that. And then Aristocats, which is a private daycare option, is also providing transportation for parents. But again, it's not part of the district. It's something they're paying for themselves personally through a third-party company.
Okay. All right. Anything else you guys wanted to mention?
I do. We have some exciting things happening with mental health. We applied for a grant and received a grant from the state that will allow us to hire an additional counselor for elementary school students. And so that will reduce our counseling load across the district as we adjust those, which will be a benefit for students. And then on October 15th, we are doing our annual Opportunities Night, and our keynote speaker will be Dr. Hank Smith, and he has a powerful message on resiliency and making good choices and supporting one another to discourage and decrease bullying and use of harmful substances.
Hey, I also wanted to ask you, I think the board also on Tuesday considering an increase to the Aquatic Center?
We are increasing fees across the board, and I believe Mr. Bigelow could talk specifically on where they would most impact.
Again, the South Summit Aquatic and Fitness Center is wholly owned by the South Summit School District, and as we look at the revenue that operation brings in and being conscientious of the tax burden, we didn't feel like we wanted to take more tax dollars and put in there, and so we will be increasing fees. It'll be about $55, whether you're single, couple, or a family. They can anticipate about a $55 increase this coming year for a year membership.
Okay. So whatever it is now, just add $55 to
yes.
it?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And that'll raise the money you need to kind of operate as an enterprise fund?
Correct.
Basically paying
and just as an example, for a family who lives within the South Summit School District, that price will be about $355 a year for a family membership.
Still a very good deal.
Yeah.
As we look around at the surrounding areas and their facilities, again, we're very fortunate to have the facility that we have in Camas, but our membership fees are still on the very low end of what others are charging.
Okay. Shad Sorensen and Kip Bigelow, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A great day.
Well, the Prospector Square Property Owners Association funding a multi-million-dollar improvement project that will include new lighting and sidewalks. It's a redo of Prospector Avenue. We'll have new bus pullouts as well. In the studio with an update, I've got the Executive Director of the Owners Association, Craig Dennis, along with the President of the Board, Marlene O'Hara. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Craig, you started the job earlier this year. I mean, tell us a little bit about yourself. You've got actually a background in news and publishing, now Executive Director of Prospector Owners Association.
I spent 30 years in the newspaper industry, left it in 2008. I was publisher down in Provo, but met my wife on a chairlift here in Park City and decided to stay put. Yeah, I teach skiing at Deer Valley part-time.
Okay, and this is a part-time job then?
It's 20 hours a week.
Yeah.
More
All
or
right.
less.
Well, for those traveling through Prospector, lots going on. It looks like we've got new sidewalks going in on the north side of Prospector right now. What else are we going to see?
They're slowly working up on the north side. They expect to have all the sidewalks on that side done in about 3 weeks, and then they'll go back and do the south side. The goal is to get, and this is a UDOT and city project, the goal is to get this done by mid-October. We've got to get the pavement done before it gets cold here. Our project that we've been working on is the Lot H and Lot D, and we're going to be repaving those parking lots. Well, we've already done one. We're going to be repaving the other parking lot probably about Labor Day in that time frame. And we got new sidewalks. We're finishing sewer work right now and putting new sewer lines in. And our part of the project, we've got a $1.1 million that we're investing this year.
Okay, and that's just phase one?
Just phase one.
Mm-hmm. So those parking lots, D and H, they stay as parking lots forever?
Yes.
They're not development lots?
No.
Because we still do have a couple of development lots
there
out there.
There is about five more lots, and there are plans in the works for two of those sites in Lot G, which is across the street from where Good Karma is, next to the Associated Plaza area. And those will start going through the city planning process here pretty quickly.
Okay. So, as I mentioned, just phase one, what else would happen? I mean, in future years or?
Oh, that's going to be, and Marlene can talk to this too, but the executive committee this month is going to be having discussions about what's next. We got two committees we're going to be forming to talk about how we fund the next stage, because overall, our master plan was a $6 million plan, and we got to figure out how to do the rest of it.
Okay. So, you had a meeting earlier, I think, this month.
Yes, we did. But of course, remember, 6 million or 6 point something million a couple of years ago is already quite a bit more than 6 million. But so we're trying to figure out how to do things within a reasonable budget and also make the place look better and improve a 30 plus year old irrigation system, add lighting to the parking lots. Our landscaping is a lot of it is overgrown and not xeriscaped at all. So we've really got our hands full.
So you met, the association met, we're scheduled to meet July 31st. I mean, did you have anything come out of that, any priorities that?
No, it was our annual meeting. We had a good attendance. We probably had 40 people in the room for a 60-member organization. I was pleased with that. But it was primarily an election of board members for the next year. We did a report of where the construction is. We've had one surprise in costs. Our sewer line costs have gone higher than we expected because of some of the soils in that district is pretty bad. And so we had to take some of the soils down to the Tooele area, and that increased some of the cost. But beyond that, no, it was primarily a report to the membership about where things are.
And we ratified the budget.
Yes, exactly. We did ratify the budget, and for the first time, we're building reserves, which one of the, you know, HOA should be doing that, but we got that into this next year's budget.
So that's how the first part of this, the $1+ million, is being funded, just through association fees and dues?
Yes, it's actually, what do you call that?
It's a special two-year assessment.
Assessment, that's the word
and
I'm
the last payment is going to be due in January of next year. And so the members have been paying a two-year assessment quarterly that comes to an end here soon.
Yeah. So what do you do, though, then, for the other portion of the project? Do you have another special assessment? Or
That will be one of the options. Going to a bank for a loan would be an option. We're going to look at all those. But now that we've got some work done, it will be easier to go to look at some other options.
Yeah. You know, we had seen with, like, the UOP, they went to the county for what's called conduit funding. I mean, is the city's not interested in helping out with that?
I can speak to that.
Go ahead.
There is a law against spending public money on private property. So we have a big problem because our property is private. So one of the things we have suggested to the city is that they take over our common area. That way they can improve it. So that is something the city is looking into, but we don't expect that to happen fast because of all the other expensive projects the city has just recently taken on.
Right, and cut back. Yeah. Given the treasure bond. Yeah.
Yes.
So are we going to see any interior work then this year? I mean, when you talk about the common space, it's really the sidewalks and lighting between the businesses.
Well, that's only part of it, because how many parking lots do we own? 11 or something
I
like
think
that?
It's 13.
13 parking lots. And we all have a private sewer system. We're probably the only place in the city that has a private sewer system. And if it's upgraded, Snyderville Basin will take it over. But that turns out to be a very major project. So we're chipping away at it, starting with parking lot H right now. But the visual impacts of improvements would be probably the greatest in the common area in the middle. So I think that's probably going to be the focus of our next phase.
Okay. When are you going to have details about that?
I would estimate next 2 to 3 months, because the committees are going to get to work on it right away. So we get it. But also, we want to see how much money we have left after we get what's the current construction done.
Yeah. So a lot of the stuff we're seeing is really, I mean, that you're paying for is underground, huh?
Foundational stuff, yes. Yeah. It has to be done.
Parking lot 8 should look very nice in terms of having sidewalks all the way around it and having lighting.
Yep.
Inside of it. Our parking lots are dark.
And this is the parking lot that's in front of Good Karma.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I don't lose sight of what the city's doing out in the street. You know, sidewalks are going to go up to 8 feet in width, depending on which side you're on. They're going to landscape all of Prospector next spring. It'll be probably too late to get it done this year. But when that part of the project's done, at least that part of the neighborhood's going to look substantially better than it has.
Okay. Any guess in terms of the because you guys just deal with the businesses. You don't have any of the residential in there. Is that correct?
No, we do. We
you
quite
do?
A bit of residential, yes.
Those are the Prospector condos?
Central Parking, for example, is part of our HOA.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Sun Peak and New Claim and Carriage House.
And then, you know, we got a hotel, Marriott, and then Park Regency.
Right. So any guesses in terms of how many are actually full-time year-round residents versus the nightly rental? Or
it varies by building. New Claim tells me it's about half full-time. Carriage House, I don't know that number. And then go ahead.
Sun Peak?
Sun Peak is about 5 full-timers.
That's
all it's in there.
Yeah.
I know one of the new buildings in Lot G is planned to be residential with about 30 units. It'll probably be apartments.
Okay. And then just a heads up that tomorrow you've got the drive-in.
Yep. Everyone's welcome to go. I understand we've sold about 50 tickets so far. So mostly that what's been bought so far is so-called lawn seating. So we got room for a lot of cars still.
Okay. Again, that's happening in parking lot
K, it's not, we don't have the signs up right now, but parking lot K is pretty much across the street from the Park City Board of Realtors.
Okay.
That's the best way to describe it.
And they'll need to access it from Sidewinder.
Come and Sidewinder, Poison Creek, and take the right, and you'll be there.
Okay.
And
all
go
right.
One way.
Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, thank you.
All Lisa. Right. Marlene O'Hara and Craig Dennis, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time, 8:39, good morning. Well, even though the Trump administration last year announced it was sunsetting the DACA program, which is the Deferred Action of Childhood Arrivals, which had temporarily protected young adults who came to the U.S. and protection from deportation, the federal court in January partially blocked the administration's move, allowing some 700,000 unauthorized immigrants who were already protected under the program to renew their applications. But that may come to an abrupt end in the next few weeks as a couple of court cases determine whether DACA can go forward or is killed for good. In the studio with an update and an appeal for funding to continue making renewal applications, I have Park City resident Mo Hickey. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie.
So let's just start with an update, if you could, quickly on where DACA does stand in the courts.
Well, this is timely. So last week, a federal court ruled that the ending of the DACA program or the suspension of the DACA program was illegal by the current administration. However, there's a court case that's being heard right now that there's an expected ruling today in Texas on the constitutionality of DACA. General feeling is that the judge in that case will rule that it was unconstitutional in its origin. So now you'll have two federal courts saying it's legal, one federal court saying it's not legal, which is the first time evidently that precedent is out there, which means it would then go to the Supreme Court, which if they had an interim hearing this summer, which is what they would ask for, to rule on this, the expectation is you would then have a 4-4 split court. So there would be no decision, which there's really going to be some interesting legal issues coming up over the next period of time. So what we're being told by the legal services we're working with is if you're eligible for renewal in the next 6 months, continue to put in your renewal applications. They will be accepted at the moment. However, new applicants are being advised not to submit their applications at this time. Even though they're eligible under the current law, they think they're going to be rejected by the authorities.
So that just means that they move forward without any kind of document?
Basically, and that's where we have a challenge. We've been focused on just this community. I mean, there's a nationwide issue here, but if you look at this community, with new applications, you know, we don't have an exact number because obviously people aren't going to come forward and acknowledge it. But the estimate is we probably have in our school system right now someplace between 75 and 100 students that have not applied that would be eligible to apply, which is significant. We also have community-wide because the program probably covers up to around 30 years old, people that are 30 years old. Just in the past 2 weeks, I've had five people come that have lost their jobs because the renewal paperwork hadn't come back, even though they submitted it on time. And, you know, this is one of those situations where you have really two sides struggling. The employer who tried to do the right thing and did hire people with DACA credible application and credible paperwork. Well, once they did that, now they're subject to acknowledging that they don't have the DACA renewal card. And when you don't get your DACA renewal card, you lose your driver's license and you lose your eligibility for employment until the card is renewed. So it's going to start affecting more than just the applicant. It's going to start affecting employers in town.
Yeah. So is it a backlog of applications that they're trying to sort through, or is it just leadership saying, find another project to do?
I've never been involved in a situation that I find more confusing on a number of issues. So, yeah, backlog is one thing we've heard. We also had three people apply, and they got notice that their renewal was approved. It was in the Salt Lake post office, and it was never delivered. So legal then advised us that DACA cards are being stolen because they're valuable. So we said, okay, so what's the next step? It's the onus is then on the individual applicant to prove that it was stolen. Otherwise, they have to pay another $495 to get a replacement card. Wow. So, the system was not intended to be this cumbersome, But, you know, the backlog argument, I don't know. I think we could do a quicker job with background checks. These are people that are already in the system. These are not new applicants. But we're struggling.
Yeah. You are trying to do another round of renewals. What deadline are you facing?
Well, we're continuing to do them until we're told by, and we're working with the number of, we're working with, and I can never say the name in Spanish, but Communities United out of Salt Lake, Immigration Legal Services, Holy Cross, a number of organizations. We're going to continue to put in the renewal applications until legal advises us not to do that. So we put in 5 renewal applications yesterday, for example. There was a little bit of a rush this week because of the Texas ruling. People wanted to get the postmark on it before the ruling. We still have some funds available, although they're limited at the moment, for more applicants, renewal applications. But we expect to continue to see this throughout the beginning of the school year at the very least. And if the court ever was to rule that DACA was legal, then we'll see a huge influx of students coming forward.
Right. So one application costs how much?
One application costs $495, and it's only good for 2 years. So that's the real challenge. And when you're on a, you know, people sometimes say to me, well, it's only $495. If you're struggling on a fixed income, or you're a student who is going to school full-time and working part-time, $495 is significant. And, you know, the great part about this community, as always, is people have come forward and contributed, and we've been able to do, I think that was our 65th application yesterday.
Wow. And again, how many do you hope to do?
You know,
till the money
personally
runs out,
you know, we'll do it till the money runs out. And interestingly, we've been reached, contacted by the Mexican consul, for example. They had a grant, they've run out of their funding. You know, everybody's running into the same challenge where you have people, you know, one of the applicants we had this year worked within our school system as a liaison to an outside organization. She was leaving to go get her master's degree in education and was going to be out of work because she's going for her master's degree. So, you know, we gladly paid for that renewal. That's someone you want in this community. That's someone you want coming back here to work in our community, and hopefully everything works out there.
So is the school district helping identify kids who might qualify?
The school district is not allowed to. I mean, back channels, I would say, without mentioning anybody, yes. I mean, people are being advised. It's being talked about. You know, again, this is a FERPA issue. We can't go in and say, or a teacher can't go in and say, who is eligible for DACA, who is not eligible for DACA.
Yeah. So are you reaching out into the Wasatch County community, or are we just staying within Park City?
You know, we have done both. We and there's been really good collaboration on this. We're open to anybody who comes forward. We've focused it on Park City residents at the beginning, but then we found out, for example, that we had Park City High School graduates who are living in Wasatch and going to UVU. So we've assisted with them. On the flip side, Communities United has been providing legal services for Park City residents, so we've been working with them. They're the only DOJ-registered legal group in the state of Utah, so we found that it's helped expedite using them. There's been connections with Park City with, I'd say, 95% of our applicants in one form or another. Either they went to school here or they work here or both.
So if someone was interested in contributing, how do they do that?
They can either go to the Park City. We partnered with the Ed Foundation on this. So the Ed Foundation being a 501c3, people are able to make a tax-deductible contribution. It's pcef4kids.org. And on the donation menu you pull down, it'll say DACA. Click on that, and you can make a contribution there. If somebody wants to contact me directly, they can contact me at 435-729-0233, and I'd be happy to answer their questions.
Okay. Mo, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
The Park City Institute welcomes songwriter, musician, and the former lead guitarist for the Eagles, Don Felder, on Saturday, August 11th at City Park. He joins me now on the phone. Good morning.
Hey, Leslie. How are you there?
Doing well, thank you. So I happened to see the premiere of the History of the Eagles documentary. It premiered at Sundance a few years ago. There's a hilarious bit in it with Steve Martin, who insists that the band is the Eagles, but really it is just Eagles?
Well, you know, it really could be interpreted either way. I think originally Bernie Ledden came up with the idea of the Eagles because, you know, it was one of the highest levels of animals in the Indian tribe. Every level of animal had a different level of spirituality, and the eagle was indeed the highest level of order in the Native American Indian religion. So he thought that was appropriate for some reason to name the band the Eagles, or Eagles, how you want to decide to use it. But yeah, Steve could be right. He could be 50% right on that one.
Okay. So what did you think? Did you happen to see that? And if so, did the filmmakers do a good job with it?
I thought the documentary was great. You know, when I was first asked to do that, I was a little reticent in accepting the invitation, but then I thought it would be really odd if I weren't represented in it. But at the same time, I knew that the editing final control would be in the hands of Don Henley and Glenn Frey, and they would do with it however they wanted. So I think I sat for well over an hour being interviewed for that in a recording studio, and I think they probably used 5 minutes, if that, of my interview. So I was kind of correct in that. And, you know, the thing that I found interesting is that since it was supposed to be the history of the Eagles, the only history that happened and was presented before the Eagles was of Don Henley and Glenn Frey. Bernie Ledden had a very illustrious career in big bands before that, Flying Burrito Brothers and other bands that he had been in and been successful in before joining the Eagles. Randy Meisner had been in the Stone Canyon Band with Ricky Nelson and in Poco before joining the Eagles, and all of that sort of information just fell to the wayside. I had a really interesting history, which is in my book, Heaven and Hell, My Life in the Eagles, really, which involves me teaching Tom Petty how to play guitar, Dwayne Allman teaching me how to play slide guitar, Stephen Stills and I being in a band for about a year when we were 14 years old, and just a history that seems like if it was going to be the history of the Eagles, it should have included everyone's history. But as suspected, it was really in the hands of the editing approval of Don and Glenn. So that's the way it turned out.
Yeah, so there were a number of lawsuits with that book. Is it still in print?
Yeah, you can get it on Amazon, absolutely. And there were not a number of lawsuits. There was just I think you can probably read online the exact details of what the lawsuit was and what it entailed. But, you know, I got it published and everything was fine.
Yeah. Well, you spent years with the band. Some great songwriting resulted, of course, the classical and a personal favorite, as I was telling you, Hotel California. Tell me about that 18-string guitar that you play on that song.
Well, it is 18-string, but it's really a 12-string guitar and a 6-string guitar that has two different necks on it. When I was 14, I saw Chet Atkins play a Gretsch guitar that he had wired that the three low strings on the guitar went out of one output and over to an amplifier on one side of the stage, and the top three strings that he played the melody on went out of another output and went to an amplifier on the opposite side of the stage. Now, in those days, stereo was a very novel, new kind of thing to see and hear. And he sat there and played this guitar, and it sounded like two players playing at the same time. One on the left playing like a bass part, one on the right playing a melody part, much like a ragtime piano player would play similar type music approaches. And so after recording that basic track for Hotel California, I'd played a lot of different guitar parts on that record. We got on the sound stage trying to figure out how in the world am I going to play that acoustic introduction on the 12 string that starts the record and then be able to flip to electric guitar and play those solos in the middle and the end of the record. And I had thought about it and thought about it. And the only thing I could come up with was a double neck guitar that was wired with two outputs like Chet Atkins had used. But instead of splitting the guitar into the low strings and the high strings, I split it into one neck and then the other neck. So when you throw this one switch, it changes from one guitar, which is the 12-string guitar, and you throw it down, that switch, throw the switch down, and it changes to the other neck, the 6-string guitar down below. So indeed, there are 18 strings on the guitar, but it's as if you could take two guitars, cut them down, and glue them together. That's what it is.
So do you use that for any other song that you do?
Nope, and it's been a blessing and a curse because it's a very iconic visual instrument. Everybody knows as soon as I put that on what song is coming. It's really kind of identified with that particular song, Hotel California. As a matter of fact, the original double-neck guitar that I played for years during the whole Eagles Health Business Over Tour and everything is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland right now, and they're going to actually take that out, and they're having an exhibit at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City, I think, starting next April, of all the legendary guitars that have influenced rock and roll. And so I've been honored to allow them to take my guitar out of the Rock Hall and use it in that display at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. So, yeah, it's been a blessing in many ways and then a curse because the thing weighs so much. It weighs as much as two guitars. And so I've been lugging that thing around on stage for over 40 years. And it's amazing that my back hasn't suffered more than it has already from having to wear that thing so many times.
Well, reading a little bit about the history of Eagles, it sounds like there were some very tumultuous years. Was it, with some perspective now that you've got, was it just egos at work here or some very basic creative division?
It was both. You know, there were some control issues. There were ego issues. There were a lot of resentment when someone's work was criticized. There were basically five A-type personalities that everyone had was a writer, could sing, and could play before they joined the band. So all of a sudden, you've got five leaders in a band, five frontmen, people that had always done their own thing as far as writing, singing, performing, and have expected to be able to do on those records what they wanted to do. And so there was just a natural conflict built in as far as band direction musically, as far as lyrics. Some people could write brilliant lyrics, like Don Henley is just a gifted lyricist, and other people had a weakness at it. Some people wrote music that was in a very country flavor when the band was trying to move towards a more rock and AM radio type direction. So there were just conflicts over all sorts of stuff. Everybody wanted to make the absolute best record possible. And it, you know, was a matter of fighting for what you believed in. And if you didn't fight, then it didn't happen. When I first joined the band, I thought I'd just joined a band that had broken up. It was constantly breaking up. So somebody was always storming out of the studio or calling in and yelling on the phone or something, you know. It was just, there were arguments all the time before I joined the band and while I was in the band and still after I left the band. So it was just the way that organization worked.
Well, of course, Glenn no longer with us. Are you still friends with the rest of the band?
You know, I have reached out, I can't tell you how many times, to either lawyers or friends or common people that I know in the business that work for Don Henley and Irving Azoff, and I've never received back any reply, to tell you the truth, from any of my attempts at just trying to reconcile. Not because I want anything, I don't want to be in that band, just to be able to let go of all the stuff that people were carrying on with them for the rest of their lives, just to release it. And I thought it would have been very healthy to have a lunch or a dinner and hug and, you know, talk about old times and have a drink and have fun and then just let it go and go on. But no one really wanted to do that. So I just went on without him.
Yeah. Well, and you have been touring, my understanding, with your own band since 2005, continue to tour with them today. The last album, I think, that you put out was back in 2012. So what are we going to hear?
Well, you mean at the show coming up, you're going to hear a lot of the songs that I co-wrote, recorded, and toured with the Eagles. A lot of the big hits from Hotel California, Life in the Fast Lane, Heartache Tonight, Take It Easy. A lot of the songs are already gone that I recorded with them in the studio or toured with them for 27 years that I was in the band. Wound up on all the live records playing those songs. So you're going to hear a lot of those. You're going to hear some of my solo work, songs like Heavy Metal, a song called Girls in Black. It was from my last CD, which you heard, you just mentioned earlier. I think it was 2012 that was released. I do a tip of the hat to my favorite blues guitarist, Stevie Ray Vaughan, and play one of his songs called Pride and Joy, and that goes over really well. People love to hear me just kind of step out of the Eagles' wardrobe a little bit and play some blues. So it's a really fun, upbeat, rocking show. And by the end of the night, everybody's standing up with their iPhones, making videos of hotel and dancing and just having a great time. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Now, can you play any Eagles song that was produced or only those that you co-wrote?
No, I can play. Anybody can play anything that's been performed or recorded. You could go out and play any of those songs you wanted, and people did.
Okay. Well, again, the former lead guitarist for Eagles, Don Felder, will be performing in Park City Saturday, August 11th. People can get more information by going online to echocenter.org or calling the box office, 435-655-3114. Looking forward to a great show. Don, thanks for your time.
All right, Leslie, appreciate it. I'll see you at the show.